Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, M, content creator, podcaster, mom of two. As women, we go through so many different seasons of life, changes, transitions, those big moves. This feeling of connectedness is something I feel like we need more of to help us through those seasons. And to be able to tap into that, no matter where you are in the world, it's not easy. And my hope is that this podcast can be even a sliver of that for you. So with that, here's a new season of The Big Move. My next guest is Adalia Salsamendi. She's a business strategist, journalist, and the CEO of Adalia Inc., which focuses on digital strategy for both brands and influencers. Her track record is crazy impressive. She's had an insane roster of luxury brands like Dior, Stuart Weitzman, and Valentino, where she executes social media campaigns. She's also been the mastermind behind some of the most prominent faces in fashion and beauty, including Chriselle Lim, Brittany Xavier, Marianna Hewitt, and Coco Bassi. This episode had me just so fired up. Adalia is no bullshit, plain and simple, and she's breaking down her big moves to New York City and now London, how she's made influencers household names, and tips to success that she's picked up along the way that can be applied to literally everyone. Now, let's get into the episode. Adalia, hi, and welcome to the Big Move podcast.
Hi, Emily. Thank you for having me.
So thrilled to have you on. Before we hit record, we started chatting and getting into like so many amazing nuggets about you and your international life and your travel and the fact that you are over in London. And so I want to like backtrack. And first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to chat today. And secondly, for those that might not already know who you are, can you give us a little breakdown?
Oh gosh, this is like my elevator pitch. So I'm Adalia Salsamendi and I'm a business strategist. So the bulk of my business, which is Adalia Inc., is strategizing for top influencers like Chriselle Lim and Marianna Hewitt and Brittany Xavier, as well as consulting and strategizing in the digital space for luxury brands like Chopard and Valentino, Cezanne. So I do a little bit of both, but all within like the social media realm.
I love it. Well, you've just pitched me, so I'm sold. I love it. We have so many, like, especially career questions for you. You are a woman on the move. I guess just to like set the stage, has there been a big move, a pivotal turning point in your life, in your story, your career that sort of has stuck out in your mind for you that you would want to share today?
Totally. I think there's three, and I'll keep this short and sweet. And one is when I moved to Los Angeles at the age of 21. It was the first time I moved out of home, which was Miami, Florida. That's where I got my first, you know, break in the fashion industry, which was working at Ford Models as an agent. So that, you know, it was all in my 20s, you know, had just legally begun to drink, right? So I'm like 21 in LA. And my career really started off in my 20s. So it was really, you know, as far as talent management, that was really exciting. And then moving to New York City when I was 30, that has always been like the most pivotal point in my career, simply because I wasn't entirely sold on moving to New York City, which now in hindsight, I'm like, oh my God, are you crazy? And thank God I listened to my older mentors that told me, like, Adalia, you have to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember one of my mentors, Alexis Borges, he said, you know, you are a Latina from Miami. Like, you don't get to say no to New York City. You know, like, you're being called for, next one of me out there to run the talent division. Like, you don't get to say no. Like, you have to take this opportunity. And that always stuck in my mind. And I'm so grateful I took that advice. And New York City just skyrocketed my career. You know, I was head of the talent division at Next Models. The people that I met, the ambiance, the fashion, it was just like an influx of information and culture and history, just, you know, coming all in. And it's to this day one of the greatest decisions I ever made in my life. And then the third is moving to London, because I had, now that I'm in my late 30s, that the novelty never wore off, right? Mm-hmm. So everything that I felt for New York City, I felt the same in my late 30s in London, which I never thought I was going to have, like that, oh, you know, like skipping down the street moment again in my life. And I did. And in that regard, it just opened me up so much more to the European market and understanding a different culture. And even though I had traveled, you know, I traveled to Paris 4 times a year and Milan and Rome and London, but to actually like be put there and like live a different culture and understand that, you know, just different ways of thinking, it opened my mind that much more. And it just, I don't know, I'm really grateful for those three experiences in my life.
That's amazing. And so you've done basically every major city move. I'm curious for you, like, what did that evolvement look like? Did it get easier, harder? Was it different with each sort of life stage? Like, what did that kind of look like?
LA, I flew in with the same flight with one of my best friends, Chrissy Fitz, who is now like this great actress. She was in Pitch Perfect. So I had like my buddy there with me. And I also have cousins in LA. My mom is a Cuban immigrant. And when she came to the States, she actually went to LA. So all her best friends still live in Los Angeles, and they all have daughters and sons my age. So when I moved to LA, it was easy because I had like, you know, my best bud with me from Miami, as well as, you know, my quote unquote family cousins, right? In Spanish, you say los primos, like those are your non-blood cousins. And that made life so much easier. And again, it was the first time I was away from home, so I was really excited. New York, I think I cried for like 24 hours because I flew into New York City. I stayed with my friend who had a cat, and I'm allergic to cats. I did not own a coat. Like, LA girl, like, did not own a coat. And I think the week before, I like went into an Old Navy and I bought this like what I thought was a coat for like $19. I could never forget. And like one of my friends in fashion just looked at me coming off of the plane. She's like, "Oh, darling, no, we gotta sort you out." It was snowing. It was 12, and you have to imagine me, like, you know, like New York City. Here I come with like this red Old Navy $19 coat. Like, oh my god, it was horrible. It was. Just, yeah. But within a weekend, I fell in love with New York City. And after the snow melted and it was spring, I mean, it was the same thing as London, right? Like, there's nothing like spring in a city that that gets cold. I love New York City. Yes.
Absolutely. I relate to so many of the things you just said, because I too like moved to New York City in my, you know, right after college pretty much. And it took me to like, maybe a week. I was like, I'm having the time of my life. It's like such a vibe when you're young and thriving in New York. It's like work hard, play hard. It's like all the exciting things. And then flash forward to London. And I don't know if it was similar or different for you. Like with London, I didn't have a network and I was really starting over. And that I think for me was probably the hardest part, especially now looking ahead and coming back and doing the reverse move. A lot of my friends have left New York City, but they're all across America. Like I have, you know, different friends and family and college friends kind of strewn about. But when you move to a foreign country, like it's not really possible. No matter how much networking you do ahead of time, you're really like starting from the ground up. So I'm curious what that was like for you.
I was extremely blessed because one of my best friends in the entire universe, like she might as well be my sister, Caroline Alderson, who is, she was actually one of the producers for Game of Thrones. She was living in London and she lives in London. And it's funny because now my colleague, Liz, is Caroline's childhood best friend, and I've known Liz for 12 years, and now she works with me. So when I went to London, it was actually a little bit easier because I already had a network. Whereas, you know, the transition between the States and London was Spain, right? I was here for like 1 or 2 years, and there, like here, I have no one. I have my husband's family and his friends, and they're amazing, like absolutely insanely incredible people. But, you know, I like speaking English, and sometimes it's a little difficult to I always say like I speak Spanish like a high schooler, and I would like to think that my English vernacular is a little bit more elevated and I can express myself as I want to in Spanish. So going back to London and having Caroline, having Liz there, my PR team is there as well. You know, I have friends in Carlo Otto at Purple PR. So it was already this network that I did have.
Sure.
And again, this was right after COVID, right? So we were just, I was indoors in Spain, like, So going to London, I guess my experience was different because of the circumstances that were like literally right before that. But what age did you move to London?
So I guess I was like 28, 29. So I was newly engaged. I was kind of like leaving my ad tech job and journey and sort of going full throttle into influencer creator life, and that kind of thing. But right, I had not had a connection to London prior to that time. But it's really interesting hearing you share that, because I also feel like all it takes is a few great women, solid, you know, whether it's a coworker, whether it's, you know, a friend of a friend, like all it takes is a few people to sort of have around you that you can kind of, you know, you build out from there. So I think that that's also just like kind of an interesting little nugget.
Yeah. And again, like I'm 39. So at, you know, in your late 30s, I'm not looking for a crew of 20 girls to hang out with. Whereas maybe in my late 20s, I was, right? I was in a sorority in college. Sure. I'm like women empowerment. I love having a group of girls around me. Like, I think that's so healthy and so important for females, especially in this industry, right? Yeah. And I have that in London, right? Like I have, you know, when I sit down with, you know, Danny always makes fun of me because it's like the Sex and the City, but there's three of us. I'm like, we always crack up of like who's who. Our conversations are always uplifting because we're, you know, one is entertainment, you know, this works with me. And then it's, you know, fashion and, you know, social media. And we're talking about books and culture. And it's very fulfilling. So I felt with London, I didn't need like a squad. I just needed like my little Sex and the City moment. And I needed that safety, you know, yeah. They give me that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's quality over quantity, especially as women. I think as we get older, we just really learn that.
Yeah.
So getting into some career questions for you, can you firstly give us a quick backdrop on how did you get into this industry, entertainment, the digital space, your agency? Like, how did this kind of come to life?
So I grew up in the PR world. My mom did PR for Univision, which is a U.S. Spanish network, for over 20 years. She just retired. This year. So from a young age, I always was going to like upfronts in New York and, you know, press trips. And I thought it was so cool. And you mix that in with Samantha Jones, you know, when I was growing up, and forget about it. I had to do PR. So that's where I started at 19 years old at a PR agency called The Agency, which was run by Liana Rodriguez and Christy Cow, who are two still very good friends of mine. And they gave me like this entirely new, I guess, view of the PR world. We did like the MTV VMAs. We had the collection, which had Porsche and Aston Martin and Ferraris. So my start was in PR. It was definitely PR. I moved to LA, and that's where I started model management. And it was at Ford. And then from Ford, I went over to Next. And that's where really these bloggers started. And I was one of the first, I think, of five agents in the entire world to represent bloggers. The team I was with, you know, we started Chiara Ferragni. We started Sincerely Jules, Danielle Bernstein. Like, it was this incredible roster of these young entrepreneurs. And, you know, myself and my team, like, really seeing, like, how can we make this work, right? We're just making the rules as we went along. And that led me to run the talent division at Next in New York. So there, you know, we did Pamela Anderson, Lana Del Rey, A$AP Rocky. So it was both influencer, blogger. Now we can call them Instagrammers, right, at the time.
Sure.
As well as celebrities. So that opened my world to the celebrity, like world. So after, I think, 10 years of model management, talent management, I realized that there was like a piece missing, and that was strategy, right? Because you go into an agency, and no matter how wonderful they are, and they're amazing agents in the States, you know, when you're looking at these entrepreneurs, especially when they're young, no one's really guiding them on, you know, financial structure. No one's really educating them on how this industry works, right? You're thrown a shit ton of money. You're thrown a lot of money. And, you know, these girls don't know the mechanics behind it, nor should they. Like, how would they? And how the industry works. And and my consultancy was just that. It was taking these influencers and really educating them about the business, how to make them a household name, and longevity, right? There's a reason that the girls I've had for 7 years are the biggest in the United States, and if not the world, because they understand they are business women. And I think that's absolutely incredible. And no one else is doing this. So I guess I present like a new, fresh perspective, right? Like, I don't work off commission. So I don't care if you take a job or not. Like, I'm going to tell you the truth. Like, hey, you should do this. Hey, you shouldn't do this. Hey, this is going to be good for your career. And really knowing and understanding that, what I tell every girl that I work with is that you are the captain of your ship. Right? Like, I can tell you where the wind is blowing. I can tell you how rough the seas are going to be. And if you want to go into the storm, I'll go in it with you 110%. But you have to be educated about it. right? You have to be educated. And that is what is lacking, especially with this new batch of influencers coming in and TikTokers, is that there's no business education. And that's what my agency provides. And then on the flip side, you have brands that are hiring influencers and then they get mad when they don't reach the ROI, or they get, you know, like, and there's a lot of miscommunication with PR agencies and brands because, you know, I'm not here to please the brand. I'm here to educate the brand. And sometimes that's not pleasing. But for an influencer campaign to really work, you have to be honest and you have to be raw. And I'm not here to sugarcoat anything. I'm not here to say, well, your idea is great. I'm actually the opposite. And I always tell the people, like, you pay me for the truth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a world where everything is always sugarcoated and yes, ma'am, no, sir, I'm the one saying, whoa, let's back up. Okay, so you want 10 influencers? Yeah, we're not going to go in with that budget. We need this budget. Oh, but no, we need, you know, and it's educating those brands as well. So yeah, I'm all about my theme is inspire, inform, empower. And that is what I take with me. Like my mission statement, my why is if I can inform you, if I can inspire you, if I can empower you, mm-hmm. inspire, inform, empower, then I'm doing my job correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're firing me up. It's like very inspiring. And you've obviously had so much success and like have such a powerhouse roster of women behind you. So I guess for the female entrepreneur, creator, the business owner that's like looking to take things to the next level, I know that you offer courses and you are, you know, you have such an offering. Could you share a couple tangible like tips on like, how do we do that? Like, what do you think is sort of like one or two nuggets you could share that are super, super important to be buttoned up on?
Yeah. Love this question. So I'll keep it to two. One is be realistic, right? Like every influencer, every entrepreneur, every creator needs to take a step back, look at their social media channels, look at what they're presenting though to the world. And does that align with where you want to go? There's always the biggest disconnect that I see when I start working with someone is that, oh, well, I'm going to give you an exaggeration just so for storytelling purposes, this did not happen. But, you know, let's say that an influencer, swimsuit influencer, right, who's always in a thong and like gorgeous tan and like, you know, wants to sit front row at Valentino, which is a very more conservative Parisian maison, mm-hmm. you know, they have to take a step back and say, okay, will Valentino look at me if I'm wearing a thong in every picture? Right? And you can say, well, we need inclusivity. You can say, well, Idalia, you were judging. I'm not. I'm just literally telling you how the universe works, right? So, and again, you pay me for this. So nugget number one is take a step back, look at your social channels. And I just gave you an extreme exaggeration.
Sure.
But does it reflect where you want to go? Your social media should always be one or two steps ahead of where you currently are.
Forward thinking. Yeah.
So that's number one. And number two, execute. Execute. Educate yourself and execute. Is it a course? Like how you said I offer. Is it that you hire a talent manager? Is it that you hire PR? Is it that you are going to a summit so you can just learn? Execute. Like if you want it, go for it. Like a girl in a thong can absolutely sit front row in Valentino.
Sure.
Like I've seen it happen. Execute. Educate yourself and execute. Like it does happen. So be persistent. Be persistent and like inform yourself.
Absolutely. You have to take action. And it's like a lot easier said than done. Put yourself on a schedule. Consistency. I'm a big believer in that too. So I appreciate you offering that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I feel like this question is very much connected to this. How do we stand out? I feel like we talk so much about being real and authentic online. There are so many creators, right? I feel like we could go on and on about how saturated it is, but it is a massive industry. There's so much opportunity. So how do we stand out?
I always love this question. And I love that you prefaced it with saying that this industry is oversaturated. And I've been saying it's oversaturated for the past 7 years. And the saturation just keeps on like skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. And there's always, and this is probably one of the most common questions that I guess, how do I stand out? And I always tell any sort of, and this is if you're an entrepreneur with a brand, this is if you're a creator, an influencer, this is if you are a woman, a man, non-binary, I don't care what you, like, if you want to make your mark on the world, you need to know who you are. And the clincher here is you don't need to stand out. I think there's such an emphasis of like, stand out and like, oh, make some noise. And it's like, well, you know, I'm going to get super tacky, but like, we're all like snowflakes, aren't we? Like, all of our designs are different. Why would we want to change our snowflake design to mimic something else? And that's where authenticity comes in, right? So sometimes you don't need to stand out. And like a perfect example, and I think she's doing it beautifully, is Pamela Anderson. I mean, she just did Paris Fashion Week. The reporter, like, she's not wearing makeup. I mean, maybe she's wearing a little, but she just went all natural. And her clothing was just neutral and just beautiful. And she just stood out because of her simplicity, because we saw Pam. So my message is, you don't have to stand out. You just have to be you. And you have to understand the why. I don't think I particularly stand out. I mean, I look like, I don't think anything really stands out about me except for my why. Why am I a business owner? Why do I have my business? Why do I want to help? Let my message stand out.
You can feel that too by talking to you. I mean, I know you just said that, you know, you don't stand out, but I feel like you absolutely do. And that you are like strong and you're taking a stand and you're right. You're not just going to lay back. Like, you really go after it for your clients. I feel like you can really feel that. And I feel like that is unique, but I also like your standpoint of like, you don't have to stand out. Like, we all offer something. We're bringing something to the table. What is that?
Yeah. And sometimes what you bring to the table is what 25 other gazillion people bring to the table. That's okay. That's okay. The difference between you and everybody else is, are you executing?
Yeah.
Are you educating yourself? Are you persistent? And how you said, is there consistency in it? Are you on a – like, there is – when Lady Gaga won her Academy Award, she said there's – oh God, the quote was something along the lines is like, there's discipline and success. And a lot of people don't realize how disciplined you need to be in order to be successful. And people rag on Kim Kardashian all the time. Mm-hmm. I would like to take anybody, including myself, on her schedule and tell me if you last a week. That is discipline. It looks great and fun and exciting. And it is, absolutely. But there's discipline in there. I know I couldn't do it. Right. So her success is within her discipline.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess when we think about your high profile clients, like a Kim Kardashian, like a Kiara, is there anything you want to sort of lift the curtain from in terms of like, whether it's their schedule, their discipline? Like,
yeah, I preface it by saying discipline, and it takes years of success. I'm sorry, years of failure for you to see a successful moment. A lot of creators and entrepreneurs, you know, when they come to me saying, well, this part of my business failed and, you know, I'm not going to start something new, or, you know, this clothing line didn't do well for me. And if we look at just basically any celebrity or any entrepreneur in any capacity, right, and in any realm, they are, if you look at their track record, for every 10 tries, they probably failed 9 times, but they struggled once. And that's all you need. That's all you need. So persistence, it goes back to discipline and persistence. And also some sort of self-awareness, and I wouldn't say ego, but a healthy sense of self and a healthy sense of being secure in your successes and your failures. And that's something that when I am speaking at any summit, I always tell the audience, I hope you fail. I hope you fail miserably. Like, I want you, like, I pray that you fail, because you're going to learn more about that yourself, the business, and what you want more from failure than from success. So that when success knocks on your door, because you're working in your little workshop like a mad woman or mad man or mad whatever, mm-hmm. when success comes knocking, you can greet it. You can recognize it, and you can keep it. keeping success is a lot more difficult than taking than receiving it. And you can only keep it when you know what failure is.
Totally. I love that. So what like lights a fire in you? Why do you do what you do? What keeps you moving every day going forward hard in your business?
Man, because I lived a life and like, I have been in therapy basically for most of my life. And I turned 39 this year and I'm like, oh fuck, I'm going to be 40 next year. My half of my life is over. And I really, really took stock of saying, I'm not going to do in the next 40 years what I've done last 40 years. And what does that mean? That means that I'm going to be grateful. Like gratitude is like such a huge thing. And I know that's like hippy dippy and people always talk about it, but like, man, it is true. Anytime that I was, you know, Paris Fashion Week with my husband and he was sick. He had the sniffles. We tested negative for COVID. So it was fine. He didn't walk in and, you know, he was just walking me from place and like helping me out. And he, you know, he said something, man, like, I feel bad that I feel bad, right? That I'm sick in Paris. And I said, man, isn't that such a great complaint? Like, look around, like we're in like mm-hmm. the deuxième arrondissement, like we're like living, you know, when you in any point in your life, take a step back and say, okay, I'm grateful for this because it just changes your entire perspective. And this is also coming from somebody that used to work at a modeling agency that was paying me $12 stipend a day, $12 a day. And I would work from 9 to 6. And then I would work at a tequila bar from 7 to 2. And wow. I would do that. So it's not like that I've had it easy. It's just the opposite. I've had it extremely, extremely difficult. I got into the business during the recession, the Great Recession in 2008. Like it was, it's hard. So now knowing what that is, and again, I'm a daughter of immigrants. Like we take nothing for granted. Like nothing is taken for granted. Like the ego is checked at the door, like mm-hmm. checked at the door. I have no time for it. I'm not interested in it. I don't surround myself with people that like, so that's what keeps me going. And then I can look around and say, okay, this is fun. I'm not stuck in an office all day because I've been stuck in an office for most of my life. I have a great husband. I have like the girls that I work with are phenomenal. If not, they would not be on my roster. I don't work with mean people. I work with people that have the same amount of gratitude towards me that I have towards them. And that's what keeps me going.
I love that. And I love the piece that you mentioned about hard work because you've put in the hard work and there's no one that's been on this podcast that's not put in that brunt work in those early years. And sometimes I think with social media, we see, you know, the flashiness, the glamour, and it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like there were years of just putting in the work every single day. So I really appreciate you saying that.
Totally. I mean, I know, you're a hard worker too.
So what keeps you feeling connected? Is it family? Is it just feeling, you know, grateful? Like what is that? What keeps you grounded in this like social media driven world we're living in?
My husband, my friends. You have to surround yourself with people that not only support you, you know, so every time I have an idea, like my friends are like, oh, let's help. Or like, you know, my husband is like the first one that jumps on the bandwagon and my mom. But having friends that are also very realistic towards you. So I don't need yes people in my life. I need true people. And I think that's huge. I don't surround myself with yes people. I surround myself with human beings that can say yes or no. My niece and my nephews, I mean, if there are, I can't post them on Instagram or on social media, but I'm with them very often when I'm in Spain and they came to visit me in London this summer. They are like, I have goosebumps saying this. They are like, my husband and I don't have kids yet. We're trying, but having like, I call them my bichos, like my little bugs, my little insects, like having my three little bugs, like that is life. That's life. Yeah. And nature. I need to surround myself by nature. I go hiking a lot. This past year, we went on safari. That really changed my perspective on a lot of things in the world. Animals, basically anything that has nothing to do with my business life. Yep. I am in sweatpants most of the day. I don't wear makeup. Before this podcast, I was literally like trimming one of my plants. I am not fashion at all. That's like what keeps me sane, like the exact opposite of my career. Like, and that's where I find the balance in my life as well.
I love that. Absolutely. I feel like it really truly is a balance. So yeah. I get that. What is like a biggest lesson learned for you?
Don't chase the money. And I'm a big money chaser, so I can say don't chase. There is a time and a place to chase. Mm-hmm. But you have to make decisions that when you put your head in the pillow every night, you need to make peace with what decisions you made. And we're human. We're not going to always make the right decisions, not because we don't want to, but because we're flawed as you know, human beings. We're not perfect. But I can say that, again, Alexis Borges, he always said, whatever you do in this industry, and this industry can get cold, this industry can get very dirty. This industry is extremely unfair. You have to be the agent of change. And whatever you do, do it so that you are at peace with yourself every evening. And in this industry, easier said than done. Easier said than done. People sacrifice their souls for something that is not worth it. And then years later, they're like, oh, crap, I shouldn't have done that. Or they have anxiety, as I did. You have to make peaceful decisions. You have to make peaceful decisions.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. It's like you almost need to meditate on it. If you think you're chasing the money, like you've got to reconnect within type of thing.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like if you're 19 or fresh out of college, like chase the money. Like yes, you have to like sacrifice. But there comes a point. But don't sacrifice at the expense of your soul, right? Don't sacrifice your morals. Don't sacrifice your ethics. Don't sacrifice your why. Don't sacrifice who you are. There are other things you can sacrifice. Time, right? Like that's a location. You may have to move somewhere. And we were talking about this earlier. You may have to move somewhere and sacrifice where you want to live so that you can build your career somewhere else. Yeah. But don't sacrifice your soul.
You've shared so many amazing nuggets. As a last sort of career-driven question to sort of round it out, like what do you think is the one thing that's been the biggest contributor to your career success?
Being honest, being kind, even though I'm not, you know, I'm definitely a shark when I need to be a shark, by no means, and I'm not like cherry pie every single day. But everything that I do, and I say this with utmost sincerity, everything that I do, there are good intentions behind it. Mm-hmm. Like you don't have to think twice about my work or my work ethic. That has made the difference. And I think that when people work with me, they know that they feel taken care of because they are. Yeah. Because they are. That has been, and that was something that, you know, I didn't even think that that was a factor that would play into my success. This is definitely from hindsight. Because if you would have asked me this question 4 years ago, for sure I would have been like, because I'm a workaholic, I like will get up at 4 a.m. to do this. Now I will not wake up at 4 a.m. for you, but I have your best interests at heart. Like I really, really do. Like you can trust me and I hope that you can trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's my secret sauce.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I can feel that in just talking to you. So thank you so much for sharing all of your nuggets, your wisdom. What is next for you? And like, where can everybody sort of connect with you, find your amazing courses? Like who can access your courses? Like, what does that look like? Give us the rundown.
Yeah. So my company, Idalia Inc. So it's IDALIA. My name, Idalia Inc. INC.com. You'll see courses there. We are refreshing all the courses. There are different price points because I wanted to make it accessible to as many people as possible. My influencer masterclass is like the hubba bubba of everything. If you really want to understand how to take your influencer career to the next level, you know, start a product, get talent management. That's it. My Instagram, Idalia Salsamendi, my full name, also shares a lot of information. So you can click on my reels, and I am constantly teaching about this industry and just like lifting the iron curtain. And I'm also like, my DMs are really important to me. Like, comment on my post and ask me questions. Like, I tend to reply and make that a video. So that one-on-one connection is really, really important for me. And I normally speak at panels once or twice a year. I just, this past summer, I taught a course in London. So yeah, just if you follow my social media channel, like you can see everything that I'm up to.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much. This was brilliant. Loved meeting you virtually. And now we need to meet in real life for a drink in London or New York or somewhere in the world. So
somewhere. Emily, like, I think your questions were so thoughtful. So thank you so much for like everything that you do in your podcast. Like, you could tell that you do the research behind it, and that you, like, everybody that comes on like is for a reason, and not every podcast is like that. So thank you for the insights that you give, not only, you know, forget about me, but just in general with what you're putting out into the universe, because it's good stuff.
Thank you. That means the world coming from you. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Idalia. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you found value from this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review, and tag us on Instagram at The Big Move Podcast and at mroberts.m. We always love connecting with you, and we'll catch you next time.